I'd like to call the Transportation Finance Division to order, please. We don't have a quorum, but we start on time and quit early, Representative Atkins. Welcome to the committee, sir. The first bill up is House File 2485, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your kindness in putting my bill up first. I appreciate that. I'm joined today by Mr. Carlson, Eric Carlson, Park and Rec Director for the City of Inver Grove Heights. What this bill does is we've got the Rock Island Swing Bridge in Inver Grove Heights. Last year, it was set for demolition, literally just days away. And the folks at the city and some folks from Inver Grove got together and said we'd like to try to save it. And give us a couple years to see if we can raise enough money to save it. And lo and behold, in a year, there was enough folks that stepped up to the plate and said we're willing to help support it and restore it. So we're in a position where we can restore it right now, a year ahead of schedule, and we no longer need the moratorium. The moratorium said you can't touch the bridge at all, which means not only can you not demolish it, but you can't restore it either. So even though the folks at the city are ready to restore it and move forward with the work, they can't touch the bridge because we did the two-year moratorium, and they're already ready for a year ahead. So all we need, Mr. Chairman, is to have the moratorium lifted that was put into place a year ago. And I'm trying to talk just long enough so that you can get a quorum, Mr. Chair.
That's what we need. One.
Timing is everything.
Yeah. Well, I can ask a question. No, that is not in the historical register, is it?
It is not.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Byrd.
Yeah, I've got a question I can ask slowly for a few moments. Representative Atkins, I flew over it the other day, and it looks like that we're talking about saving the West Bank end, right?
It is the west half, yes.
The span on the pier and out to the river was there, but from the pier to the bank, it looked to be gone. Does that need to be replaced, or was it removed and going to be reinstalled? Or
yes.
It's
the latter. The first couple sections on the Inver Grove Heights side, mm-hmm. which would be the west side, right. were removed for safety concerns.
Okay.
We will, part of the plan and part of the cost is to reinstall the sections to connect to the original bridge, sections, what, Eric, 3 and 4?
Yes.
That remain in the river. And ultimately, the goal is to have one of the most unique scenic points of view anywhere along the Mississippi River. The bridge itself, just for a little bit of background, it was built in 1895. And has been. Are you at a quorum, Mr. Chair?
We're at a quorum.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Byrd. And unless you had someone to move it, the chair will move House File 2485 to recommend it to pass and sent to the Finance Committee. Did you check with that? Did you want to go to Finance?
Mr. Chair, I'm not aware that there was a request by Finance.
No, I didn't know, and I thought you did because it's in the bond bill, correct?
We've run it two ways. We ran it separately through your committee, and then just in case the bonding bill were to encounter a certain problem with a certain governor, we've got it running separately there. So I believe that this is ready to go straight to the floor. Requires no funding.
Where did you get it from? I mean, the bill, Representative. Well, it came from the Policy Committee. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then we could say it could go to the floor.
That's
just
right.
Just recommend it pass.
To.
Okay. Okay, and we also, as long as we have a break, someone move the minutes?
Yeah. Hmm? Someone.
Abby tells me we got it from Finance, has to go back the same way.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Well, we love to make stops any place that wants to listen, so okay. We'll go there, too.
We have a pause. Would someone move the minutes or look at the minutes of February 11th? Representative Scott moved the minutes of February 11th. Any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The minutes are approved. Now I think we're set to go, Representative Atkins.
Okay. So we just need the motion then, Mr. Chair, is to move it out of here to Finance. Is that right?
That's correct. The Chair had moved that House File 2485 be recommended to pass and sent to Finance.
Okay.
Now you may proceed.
All right. Well, We're all set.
You're all done?
I don't think you need, anybody else need to hear anything more?
I thought the gentleman, you wanted him to testify or not? No. Any questions other than Representative Beard?
He's been very articulate.
I was just being helpful, Mr. Chair.
Well, the chair renews the motion that House File 2485 be recommended to pass and sent to Finance. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? House File 2485 passed. Thank you, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
The next bill up is Representative Obermueller.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Do you have someone going to move? Otherwise, the chair will move.
Chair, if you would be so kind. Representative Mason.
Representative Mason moves House File 2485 be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance. This one's got caused, I think. Or 2801, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Obermueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The House File 2801 is the complete streets bill that I'm hoping most of you have already heard about. Many of you are co-authors looking around, so I appreciate that. The bill essentially establishes a state policy for cost-effective, common-sense, complete streets policy. The bill essentially directs the Department of Transportation in Minnesota here to implement, first to develop and then implement a complete streets policy that will be for road construction and reconstruction that goes on in our state. The goal being to develop a balanced transportation system that integrates all the different modes of transportation and into the planning process. There are a lot of different people who interact with our roads. Certainly there's cars. I drive on roads every day, as I'm sure you do. We have transit issues. We also have a lot of people who interact with the roads in terms of riding a bike along the side of the road, trying to cross the street if you're a senior, trying to cross the street if you're a kid. And we need to make sure that our transportation planning really takes into account on the front end, before we've got the road built, all the different people who will come in contact with it. So that's the purpose of the bill, is to kind of establish that policy out there. I've got with me today a constituent, but also an advocate for this program, Janelle Waldeck, who would, with the chair's permission, would like to say a few words as well.
Representative Champion has a question.
Oh, sure.
Representative Obermueller, I heard you sort of go down a litany or your list of all the considerations that need to be a part of thinking around complete streets, but there's one important constituency group that I didn't hear you mention when we think in terms of complete streets, which is those who are disabled, for example. And so I want to know if, number one, there's going to be intentional considerations around Americans with disabilities and whether complete streets allows for those laws, those ADA laws, to also be adhered to.
Representative Obermueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Champion, thank you very much for pointing that out. That was an oversight on my part in my opening comments, but certainly this is a very important part. With respect to folks who are facing disabilities, and there's a lot of interactions with roads trying to cross, if you're blind, for example, or if you need to have wheelchair access to get out across the road, or simply making sure that the roads are all built in a manner that's consistent so you know what's coming if you're not able to see what's up ahead of you. So certainly this is that is a big feature of the bill. And the goal of the whole bill, of course, is to put the right infrastructure in place in the right context. So it's all context sensitive. So that in any given community, you might decide that because of a school nearby, you want to have sidewalks for kids. If there's an area where people who are going to be accessing a park that have disabilities, you may want to take into context how a road around that area would be built to accommodate those needs. And so the whole purpose of the law would be to say, or this bill would be to say to the MnDOT, let's establish out the policy to look on the front end how these various groups might interact with the road and plan for that accordingly.
Thank you. Do you have a witness,
Mr. Chair,
or a testifier?
I do. Thank you.
Is that Mrs. Waldeck?
Yes.
Or Ms. Waldeck?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Janelle Waldeck. I'm the Prevention Advocacy Director at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota. I'm here today to speak on behalf of the Complete Streets Coalition in support of Representative Obermueller's bill, House File 2801. Blue Cross is one of 57 organizations that belong to the Complete Streets Coalition. I'm sure it's not common that you have a health company in front of you making comment on transportation policy, so let me tell you a little bit about why Blue Cross supports this bill. We really see complete streets as a strategy, a very important strategy, to address rising obesity rates across the state of Minnesota, both among adults and kids. We know that safe roads support increased physical activity and better health by making it easier for people to get around on foot or by bike. And that's why our company has gotten solidly behind this proposed legislation. But improved community health is really just one of the benefits of this bill. This issue has brought together a broad range of stakeholders and organizations in support of it. Some of them include the AARP, the American Council of the Blind of Minnesota, the American Heart Association, the Lutheran Coalition for Public Policy in Minnesota, the Minnesota Association of Small Cities, the Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, and those are just to name a few of the 57 groups that have signed on. So some of our organizations support this bill because we think it's really smart health policy, which is why Blue Cross supports it. But some of our partner organizations support it because they think it's really smart transportation policy, or really smart economic development policy, or really smart energy policy, or really smart public safety policy. This issue has benefits from all of those perspectives. If adopted, a statewide complete streets bill really builds on some tremendous work that has happened at the local level on this issue. Just in the last year alone, four local communities across the state have adopted their own complete streets ordinances. They include the city of Rochester, Hennepin County, Elbert Lee, and St. Paul. In addition, just in the last 10 days or 2 weeks, as the language for this bill has been finalized, a number of city councils and county boards across the state have passed resolutions in support of the statewide complete streets bill, and there are many more that are in the pipeline that we'll see coming through in the coming days. So on behalf of the Complete Streets Coalition, I thank you for your time and your consideration of this bill. I thank Representative Obermueller for your leadership of this effort, and I encourage all of you to support the bill.
Are there any questions? Yeah. Representative Beard?
Mr. Chair, perhaps I'll withhold until someone else asks a question.
Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is actually for Representative Obermueller. And I should note that the Duluth City Council is looking at an ordinance as we speak. Representative, I know we chatted briefly on this, but my question to you was, have there been any consideration for an encouragement of communities to look at the complete streets policy as they review their comprehensive plans? Not a mandate, but just an encouragement, an acknowledgement that if the state thinks this is something worthwhile for us to do, it's maybe something that local government can at least consider when they do their every five-year update on their comprehensive plans.
Mr. Chair and Representative Reiner, obviously, we want a point I need to make sure we're very clear on. This is not a mandate, and I appreciate you bringing that point forward for local governments. It does require the MnDOT system to put this in place, but not our local governments. But as Ms. Waldock noted, there are a lot of organizations, cities, counties that are looking at this already, and the bill actually has language that encourages local governments to take context-sensitive solutions and complete streets into consideration. I think the comprehensive planning system is a fabulous place to do it. I know the city of Eagan is, I've been putting some working with them to try to force them to move them along to get some complete street. That'll be part of their comprehensive look at the cities as well. So I think that's a great opportunity for people to do it on a local level. And this is really an important state policy to put in place for these local agencies and governments that are trying to do it on there. They don't want to be butting up against problems at the state to try to implement their policies. So it actually will help in that regard as well.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Representative Reinhart.
Representative, would you refer me to Subdivision 5 as the reference in the bill to the encouragement of the local units to consider that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Reiner, yes, Subdivision 5 does deal with the local road authorities and also encourages them to do that, to implement policies on their own local levels as well, to integrate with the state road funds that would be coming through.
Further questions? Thank you, Mrs. Walker.
Oh, no, I do have
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess Representative O'Malley, to that point, maybe you can alleviate some of my concerns. It says in subsection 2, it says application complete streets applies to every road construction, reconstruction, rehabilitation project funded partially or completed by the state. So is that a mandate or is that an option?
Representative?
Mr. Chair and Representative Susan, the funding piece of the money that's coming through the state will be under the policy of MnDOT, but the actual policy is being put in place at MnDOT. Local communities, for example, I can't remember what your community is, but if the city of Eagan, for example, decides on a city street to do a complete streets policy or not, that's not going to be controlled by this policy. But if state funding is being added to a road, if there's state funding involved in it, then MnDOT's state policy on complete streets would be involved. And the essentialist would be that the planning process that MnDOT and organizations who are going to complete a street with state funding, that planning process would be part of the complete streets idea. Does that answer the question, sir?
Yeah.
Representative Severson, there's an amendment maybe addresses your problem. I don't know. It looks like it's the same section. Should we just move the amendment first?
If you could
see Representative Mason, you want to move amendment H2801A2? Representative Obermuller, do you want to discuss the amendment?
Thank you. Well, the first part of the amendment takes out the legislative findings. I know that's Article 1. Several folks on the floor of the House have made a point of putting this, that we don't want to put this kind of language into our statutes, which I respect and appreciate. Of course, we keep it in here because this is a new concept to many, and we put it in the initial bill so people looking at it would understand where we were going. So that's the basic of it, of Article 1. The second chunk is taking out the local sense is sensitive to local context. We think that's redundant language, and one of the groups that looked at it and helped us formulate the bill gave us some ideas that might be language we didn't need. The subdivision 2 that is being referenced at 2.4 and 5, it was actually pulling that out. As to a question as to whether that's I mean, obviously, we're taking that language out. I guess that's the long and the short of the concern that you have there. The last page on page page 2, line 9, is just some language chaining there. We're adding in training as well, it looks like.
Any further questions on the amendment?
No.
Representative.
Not to the amendment, to the bill after we amend.
Representative Severson, did that help? Do you have a further question?
Yeah.
That took care of it. No questions on the amendment? If not, all in favor of the amendment A2, say aye.
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 Contrary? Amendment is adopted. Representative Obermuller, now you may continue.
Thank you.
We have some
questions. Just Representative Beard, I think.
And they have Representative Beard and Newton.
Mr. Chair, now I have actually a comment. Now, first of all, thank you, Representative Obermuller, for taking out the legislative findings. I'm one of the ones that is happy to speak about those on the floor of the House. So, yes, mission accomplished. You had your press conference. You had your first hearing. We all know why you're thinking about this. And there it goes. So I appreciate that. The other issue, though, I have, it has to do with public safety. And it's to the comment, I think, that is it Ms. Waldock just made. And I'm looking at the little handout that she did here on complete streets. The picture on the left of the first page shows a sidewalk off to the side, and I'm all for sidewalks, and I love bike trails. But the next thing I'm seeing bike lanes painted on streets. Not so much. And I'm going to remind you of a discussion. You're not on this committee, but we had a discussion here a couple days ago about pedestrian crosswalks and what happened whenever we elevated pedestrians to some holy status and painted stripes on the roads, and all of a sudden pedestrians are supposed to be safe and have the right-of-way, and we had 12 pedestrians hit and killed in crosswalks last year. Sure, it's a good idea, but once again, you can be right, and you can be dead right. So I'm looking at these, and I'm thinking, have we thought this through? How are we doing with bicycle accidents from people screaming along a downtown Minneapolis street, and somebody opens the door when they've parked at the meter along the street? I imagine that hurts. I'm thinking of turns in busy traffic, whenever there's a delineated bike lane, and I'm what really gives me heartburn on this is there seems to be a movement to rewrite traffic laws so that if you're in an automobile and you have a conflict with a bicycle, you're immediately at fault in the automobile until you can prove yourself innocent. And this concerns me a great deal with the trend of where we're going when it comes to mobility. Riding bikes is a great idea. Having bikeways is a great idea. These things, especially from the public safety perspective, I wonder if you've thought that through, if you have any thoughts on that, either one of you.
Ms. Waldock?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I really think the intent of the Complete Streets Law is to make it safer for people who want to use any mode of transportation, bikes, walking, and frankly, cars. I mean, we need to be sensitive to and understand the dynamics between people who are on automobiles and people who are on bikes. And this isn't a law that puts the priorities of the bikers ahead of the cars in those cases, or gives them free rein at the expense of cars being able to do what they need to do. It's the balance of all of those different modes is what this is trying to achieve.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, the other comment I guess I would say is that the goal of this bill is to start thinking on the contact side whether that bike path really should be there in these pictures or not. And okay. It's the design front as to whether this bike path was put in because this was the only place it fit because the road was already constructed. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we had planned a little farther ahead by putting this policy in place and doing that planning, we would have avoided this circumstance.
And Mr. Chair, as we talk about this going forward, I just want all of us to have heard parts of this discussion because we may at some time want to revisit the whole thing about bikes on sidewalks and how we build our sidewalks or what we want to do with that, especially with children riding and, of course, the little electric scooter thing. You weren't here, Representative Mueller, when we did the scooter bill. Whoa, baby. Oh, by the way, I might point out proudly, since we passed the scooter bill so that you can ride those on streets under 30 miles an hour and you have to wear a helmet, not one fatality, not one serious injury in the 5 years the scooter bill has been on the books. So, oh, by the way, I digress. The other thing but I just had to get that little word in there because I know there were a couple of reporters who were convinced we were going to have blood in the streets and all that other stuff. Yeah, it was a mess. Anyhow, the business of doing this, first of all, I should point out that MnDOT has a complete streets policy that they're voluntarily doing, members. This just seems to be laying on top of that. And when it goes to statute, you know, I'm not a big fan of putting more pages in the 15 volumes we have. However, let's talk about the cost for a moment. You know, it strikes me, and one of my paranoias is this is another little hole punched in the bucket that we call the Trunk Highway Fund, which are constitutionally dedicated funds that are collected from people who drive cars and trucks to build roads so that we can get around in all weather to do our mobility things and carry our widgets to market and whatnot. Is this going to be funded from the Trunk Highway Fund, or how does the money flow on this if we decide we're going to widen a street or build a trail? Where does that extra expense come from?
Representative.
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, I want to make sure I understand your question. This bill is only about establishing the policy at MnDOT. And so the cost to this is whatever the reporting requirements are, which my understanding is basically nil. So, I mean, so the kind of the first step of what this bill actually does, there really isn't a cost to the Trunk Highway Fund and no impact on that at all. And I think there's someone from MnDOT who maybe could confirm that piece. As far as how funding goes for whether we decide to put in a bike path or something on any given road down the line, that's going to be handled exactly how it is handled today. This bill won't affect that, except to the extent that we might actually have some long-term cost savings over the course of all the programs because we'll be planning ahead for whether a bike path makes sense there or not. And so rather than saying, well, we've put a bike path on every other road we've put through in this area, we might decide this isn't a place for it or not. So there might be an impact that way, but the funding wouldn't be affected by the text of this bill anyway.
All right. Mr. Chair, thank you.
That was my concern. Basically, I think, as you, the members of the committee, it's our charge to protect highway funds, basically, because they're a dedicated fund. And there's a question here, in my opinion, we're already diverting some things in the area of bicycle when we stripe a road. And I have indicated to the author and some of the people that I visited with that perhaps we should be considering some cost, retrieve some cost from the bicycle. We're providing the infrastructure. They don't have any bicycle tax or anything else. And not that this is going to happen on every street, but definitely there's a cost involved. And I think something we have to be concerned about, and Representative Overmueller is aware of that too. I do have Representative Newton and Morrill, but you know, the committee should be aware of that. There's a cost involved, but again, it's not on every street or every road either. And as Representative Overmueller pointed out, basically this is dealing with the trunk highways right now, but the complete streets, in my understanding, is for all streets. Isn't that right, Representative?
Mr. Chair, it's for all streets.
Policy.
The policy would apply to any street where there was state dollars involved from,
right.
from any source.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Obermuller, as I've talked with you about the schools and the School Board Association, have they now been a part of the list of organizations that are on board with this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Newton, they are not a part of the coalition. I have not been part of conversations in terms of talking with them. I don't know if other coalition partners have, but we'd be happy to.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I can continue, it's one of the concerns I've had and out in Representative Scott's area, for example, as we have development, the cities go ahead and they move on the streets, the sidewalks, and they're not really taking full consideration into how children get to school. And I think it's terribly important that when we talk about local governments, we include the local school board as well. So I'd appreciate it if you would consider that and at least get the Minnesota School Board Association involved. Thank you.
We certainly
Thank
could do
Representative
that.
Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, nice segue from Representative Newton. I represent St. Peter, which is the home of the Minnesota School Board Association. And in St. Peter, when I was on the school board, one of the issues we had was safe routes to school. We were trying to fight childhood obesity. Not only were we trying to fight childhood obesity, but the school budget was such that we couldn't keep busing kids from 1 mile. We had to extend it to a 2 mile radius. So kids now had to get to school. And we were working with the federal government and working with MnDOT, trying to figure out ways to make it safe. And Representative Beard, you're absolutely right. Crosswalks, for example, we put up solar flashing lights right near the schools so the kids could walk safely. And unfortunately, Representative Beard, whether there's a striped line or not, and maybe that's because I've been hit, someone's going to open the door on that car, and whether there's a striped line or not, I've got to be careful as a biker. But you know what this does? This at least gives the opportunity to say, let's put those bike routes in St. Peter or St. Paul along routes in a planned way so that we can at least minimize some of that. So I'm thankful to you, Representative Obermuller, for bringing this bill, not only because of childhood obesity, not only because school districts are actually going to have to limit the transportation they're providing, but I'll tell you, down in my area, we had bikes on Highway 169 going between Mankato and St. Peter when gas was $4. Mm-hmm. And they were swerving because the semis would go by, and you're getting blown side to side. Mm-hmm. I don't want $4 gas coming back, but I do want people to be able to get to work safely when they live in a county that doesn't have transit. I want kids to be able to get to school safely when school funding is cut. And Representative Beard, I agree with you on the truck highway funds, and I think your points are well raised, but I wanted to balance them with some other concerns.
Representative Magnus?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was going to ask if MnDOT would come down there and testify and figure out just how much this is going to cost, because I don't see any physical notes with this, any monetary outbreak, so I don't know if it's worth saving Maul from getting hit by a car he runs into with his bicycle or what. I don't know what it's going to cost. So,
Representative Magnus, the fiscal note is in the process. They changed it, and it'll be in the finance. They don't have one today, but it'll be for the finance committee.
We have a rough idea then, just so we, because if we're going to vote on it here, since we're the fiscal committee.
We don't have a rough idea, no. Mm. Unless we do. In the meantime, Representative Holberg, you had a question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, am concerned about the cost. I don't know why we would let this on the committee until we know whether the costs are general fund or trunk highway fund and have a fiscal note. It's our jurisdiction as a transportation committee over the transportation's budget, not the finance committee. So I for one, would like to see a fiscal note. But in the meantime, we've heard testimony that this is voluntary, and I appreciate the amendment, because the amendment goes about 60% of the way what I think needs to happen to this bill before it makes sense. My concern is twofold. You talk about it being voluntary, but if you look on page 2, line 28, you're referring to AASHTO standards. You're saying that they must be accepted as an alternative. And so that doesn't seem to be a lot of discretion there. So can you explain this part of the bill to me and how this language supports a voluntary program?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Obermueller.
Thank you, and Representative Holberg. The reason I believe this is voluntary, and I do believe it is because what this is saying is that if a local government agency or a county wanted to use this standard as opposed to the state standards that are existing, they would be able to do that. So that no one's going to be obligated to use this policy or this standard as opposed to the state standard that are currently in existence. But if they want to, they can for this three-year pilot program. And the goal is to give a little bit more flexibility to where you would otherwise maybe have to go through a variance process under those statutes 162.02 and 09.
Okay. Well, given that response then, can you tell me, given the way the transportation funding works, who is going to be responsible for the additional costs associated with this standard?
Representative?
Yes, because you're giving no discretion to MnDOT. In other words, MnDOT can't say to the locals, no, we only have $10 million in the project costs for this project. And if you choose, because if you choose the standard, MnDOT must do that, then where does the money come to pay for these additional amenities under that standard?
Representative?
Mr. Chair, and I prep. I'm living that, so I apologize. Julie, perhaps could respond to that particular issue if that's...
Ms. Skolman?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Julie Skolman, the State Aid Engineer of MnDOT. I think we're mixing a couple of things. This particular section that you're talking about is for state aid-type projects, and so there's no additional cost to the Trunk Highway Fund for a county or city choosing to use this. What it does is have a program to allow them to not use the normal state aid standards, but opt to use the ASHTO standards on a pilot basis so that we can evaluate the differences and see if there's costs or benefits to doing that. Okay. The first question you asked was about MnDOT Trunk Highway adopting the Complete Streets policy. Mm-hmm. And we do anticipate that on certain projects there would be an increased cost because we're doing something more. But our hope is that because we would be looking at it at a planning level first before we come to an individual project, the overall cost will be less for the entire program. There might be one project that, yes, the cost will increase, but on another one, because we're doing it early on and we're not retrofitting, we would actually save money. We have acknowledged that the cost participation policy that MnDOT has with counties and cities is going to need to be looked at, because MnDOT choosing to do some of these on a particular trunk highway project could cost more, and we certainly, it's not appropriate for us to say, because we've adopted this Complete Streets policy, now you, the city of St. Peter, have to pay more because our policy says anything outside the 24 feet is your cost. So we have to look at that and come up with some different standards. We haven't done that yet, but that is part of my work plan.
Representative Goldberg.
Mr. Chair, that gets to my point exactly. When you say that there's not going to be additional cost to the system, there's nothing in this bill that prohibits the panel that does the delineation of how we put together our needs, what we include in needs in order for the formula and the distribution to work. So how do we know that if we pass this, that committee, which has jurisdiction over setting what's included in needs formula, if they were to include Complete Streets in part of the distribution formula process, then yes, more state aids money under CASA or NSA would go into these projects by virtue of the fact that Complete Streets is now part of the needs formula. That's my concern. We historically have tried to not be too prescriptive with the state aids group and what they determine. I mean, in the past we made them go from lane miles to road miles. I mean, you know, on big kind of issues we step into that realm, but we've tried to stay out of. But I have major flags with this legislation, knowing the possibility that we would then have this body decide to include all of these amenities in some kind of needs formulas which then would set up winners and losers relative to how much money they get under those formulas, number one. And number two, in cases of like Dakota County, where Dakota County requires city participation at a 45% level on county projects, Dakota County can go in and say, we want complete streets and we're going to add all these amenities. And by the way, thank you, Egan, Lakeville, Burnsville, for paying for 45% of all these wonderful things that are supposedly optional.
Ms. Skolman, do you comment or not?
No. I can't argue with her.
And again,
well, I mean, that's
a legitimate question.
We hear testimony that this is voluntary, that it's not going to affect funding, that you can do it if you want, but given the nature of how we distribute funds within the transportation system and how we identify needs, in order for me to be supportive of this kind of language, I think it has to be very explicitly clear that, I mean, right here you say MnDOT must accept this standard if the locals want it, irregardless of what the effects are on the cost and distribution of state resources at the local level. And I don't think it's being portrayed fairly, because MnDOT has no right, number one, to say, wait a second, there's not enough money in the system right now to be doing complete streets on 80% of our projects. Are you following me, or?
Sir.
I bet your leader knows what I'm trying to get at here.
No, I think to Representative Holmberg, I know you've got some good points, and that's my concern. But I wonder here now in Article 3, this is only a pilot program, and I think that issue should be brought up to state aid.
Yeah.
Representative Holmberg.
Mr. Chair, I would agree that it's only a pilot project if on page 2, line 28, we didn't have the standard of must be accepted. Because by saying that this standard must be accepted, you're giving the locals the ability to drive the truck on this or drive the policy, and MnDOT has no discretion on whether or not it's advisable or should be allowed. So there's a must factor in this driven by the locals, not by MnDOT, for the system as a whole.
Mr. Chair, if I could just, and thank you for bringing that forward, but as we were just looking, on 2.26, though, it has to first be requested by the local road authority, and it has to be with the approval of the state aid engineer. So there is, the MnDOT still would retain the discretion to basically avoid that result that you're worried about. I'm not sure if that is satisfactory, but they would have that retention, right?
Representative Holbrook.
Just for the record, the state aid engineer could deny it for any reason whatsoever. So they can deny every single request at this standard if money's tight, our needs are 10 times what the dollars are, they know that this is going to add amenities that aren't to the core mission of MnDOT, they can deny all of these.
Mr. Chair, my understanding from the language we've got is that would be the case. Now, they may ultimately limit themselves because they're going to establish the policy going forward, so they may set some, the department may set some goals out here for the state engineer, but this language would give the state engineer the right to do that. That's correct.
Any further questions? Representative Defke?
I had another one, too, and I was just looking at the description of the bill requiring the Commissioner of Transportation to implement complete streets policy and requiring reports. I mean, in these days where we're reducing mandates on some of our local governments and our agencies in order to save costs, we're adding them, and I support Representative Holberg's concern. I wanted to ask you a question because you did mention something that this is tied to anything with state funding. I had a young man in my office today talking to me about this program, and I described to him the 22 miles of bike, walking, wheelchair trails that we just finished in my district. It was the Dakota Trail that opened this summer, where we had just tons of people, reduced traffic fatalities and accidents in my district by quite a bit. Now, that had nothing to do with improving the state of the roads in my district. And if we came back and said to MnDOT, we need to work on improving a road, we already have 22 miles of bike trail that the Three Rivers Park District built for us. We would not be interested in another bike trail. We have two already out in our area. Are you telling me that my district could not get state funding for their roads?
Representative. Mr. Chair and Representative Depke, absolutely not. The whole goal of this bill would be to put, this is a great example of where the context makes all the difference, because in your case, it wouldn't make any sense, and presumably your local road authority and your engineers would be identifying the fact that you don't need an additional trail right next to one you've already got going on. So in that sense, there wouldn't be, the policy would actually work by analyzing that road location when it was being constructed or reconstructed, and deciding that that was a use that wasn't appropriate for that location. By contrast, they might decide that, and I haven't been out to your trail, so I apologize, but there might be a need for a sidewalk or a special kind of crossing or something that we would take into account as we're planning out that road. So that would actually put into context exactly what we're trying to do here, is the right money, the right project for the right road.
Thank you, and thank you, Chairman.
Ms. Skolman, I'd just like to ask a question. Apparently, a lot of this will be addressed when the county engineers file our annual needs report. I would presume there'd be a standards committee, and design standards would be affected, and some of these streets may have, you know, bicycles on it, and that would be reflected in their needs when they file out their section reports.
Mr. Chair, a big reason that I support this pilot is that we can actually have some evaluation of what difference does it really make if we use the current state aid standards or we use the ASHTO standards, so that we can bring some data to the County Engineer Standards Committee and they can make a recommendation as should it affect the needs, should it not affect the needs. I'm sort of with the representative here that we don't know enough to what would happen to it, so I'm supporting this pilot so that we actually are making a thoughtful recommendation to them. But yes, they certainly do look at this and they make the decisions on how it affects needs then in the future.
Representative Hober.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has there been any preliminary look at these ASHTO standards and what components of them would qualify for state constitutionally dedicated funds and what would have to be paid for by local sources or general fund?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holzman, we have done a very preliminary look at the state aid standards compared to the ASHTO Green Book standards, and there aren't that many differences. There are some additional widths, some clearances to curbs and to medians, but for the most part, they're pretty close. So we don't anticipate major shifts other than some, there are some places where ASHTO would allow you to have 10-foot lanes, and our standards would have an 11-foot lane minimum. And that's, those would be rare cases. They would be used on inner city kind of main street things.
Representative Holber.
And if I might, then is it just in your preliminary discussions, is it your assumptions that the additional costs associated, if any, additional costs with this different standard, the cost of those would be borne 100% by local dollars as opposed to constitutionally dedicated dollars?
No, I wouldn't.
Representative Skolman?
I couldn't say that. If they're on a state aid route, the local agency would probably want to use their state aid funds. I mean, we don't have a way of saying because you're using complete streets policy to develop your project, you have to use local dollars. And this proposed bill does not say that.
And if I might, then historically you've used those funds for bike trails?
Ms. Skolman?
We do use them for bike trails if they follow a state aid route, and so, and that we can say they safely remove traffic that would be in conflict with motor vehicles onto a safer route along. We would not use it for something that is not paralleling a state aid route.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Zuers has a fiscal note, a temporary one. If you want to comment on that, Ms. Zuers.
Mr. Chair and members, there's a very, very preliminary note from MnDOT that I just received, and their current estimate, and I want to emphasize that this will most likely change, is that they are estimating that roughly about $2 million over the course of fiscal years 11 and 12, so that's $1 million per year from the Municipal State Aid Street Fund would be needed to cover MnDOT's internal costs, which would be for the reporting and such. So, but that at this point, that's all we have. So,
now, Ms. Zuers, I presume that's strictly for the pilot project.
Mr. Chair, yes, that is, I believe, for the pilot project.
And Ms. Gallman, just to clear it up a little bit, again, technically would be my understanding that not all streets qualify for this. I mean, it's only certain streets, and as she pointed out, generally on municipal state aid streets. And even every one of those won't. Generally, it might be more in a metro area rather than rural, although a lot of rural areas. So it would be reflected as you do some of the other items, whether it's storm sewer, curb and gutter. There could be each section when it presents their needs for the screening committee, that would reflect in that. So it really wouldn't be an imbalance. It'd be only those streets would qualify would get the needs, and ones that don't get it. I mean, that's basically the way it works. And that's what would show up here once you establish the pilot program. I presume your standards, they would report their in their annual report, that would reflect in their needs update. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, I'm not positive how to answer that. If you look at what they're proposing here, they're saying not all modes on all roads,
right,
and that you have to go back and do the look at the whole system. I think that's the place where you would find out that some of the state aid routes should have some of this work, and others you would say, no, we should not be using these standards. This is a heavy truck route. It shouldn't have bicycles on it. It should not have particular pedestrian crossings. And so until you do the look and the plan for the whole system, it's hard for me to respond and say it's going to affect all of the state aid routes in a particular city.
That's the point I was making. You really answered it. That's the question I was asking. Because it's not going to affect each road. You're going to have to look at the standards, and some of them won't be.
Yeah.
And just so the committee is aware of that, I think there's a concern that it's a total cost for the total system, and it's only going to affect, as any other road, whether you got a curb and gutter, some of them have it, and some have storm sewer, and some don't. So that's reflected in your needs. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd be curious to see if the local units of government are up for the $2 million out of their fund for the study. Seems a little staggering to me. Was there a preliminary number on FTEs per year to do a $1 million a year study?
Mrs. Lewis, I presume that's only for the study, or is that the total cost of the project? It's like a lot. No, I agree. That's a pretty heavy cost.
Mr. Chair and members, the estimate is for the $2 million over the 2-year period is for the internal costs to complete the process at MnDOT. So that and that's all of the information I have right now in the fiscal notes. So
in other words, no FTEs were identified on the $2 million cost.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, no.
We can check with Representative Holberg by the time we move this out to finance whether we should move it out or not, and make certain that it's cleared up in finance. There's no doubt about that, right? Unless there's we haven't passed the bill yet or anything either, but I mean, that's a discussion we're going to have to decide on too in here in the committee, right?
Mm. Well, Mr. Chair, I'm sure the committee will follow your lead, but I don't really, no offense to the Committee on Finance, but I don't really trust them to have the same level of expertise on dedicated road funds that this committee has.
Let's see. We have Ms. Goldman, I think, unless there are further questions.
Thank you,
Mr. Mutzko, is that it? Mutzko, the city engineer? Maybe we'll get some answers here. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you for letting me testify on behalf of this today. My name is John Mutzko. I'm with the City of St. Paul, city engineer. I'm also on the legislative committee with the City Engineers Association, League of Minnesota Cities, and we did have a conversation about this bill on Friday. First off, let me say we strongly support complete streets. It's how can you be opposed to bomb, pow, and apple pie? It is a very important thing that we need to do. In St. Paul, we've implemented bump outs, traffic circles. We've done road diets, 4-to-3-lane conversions. We have over 1,000 miles of sidewalk. And we appreciate legislation that provides guidance, but have a concern about the definition of complete streets as it's written in the bill. We direct you to the complete streets report on page 10 and understand that complete streets does not mean all modes on all roads. And that was the report that was completed at your direction over the last year. We would not want to provide truck traffic on residential streets, nor do we think it's feasible to provide sidewalks on interstates. But we'd encourage you to work with the city engineers, county engineers, and MnDOT to better define or follow what the complete streets definition is. There's been a lot of good discussion that I've heard today about what it is, and it doesn't mean all modes on all roads. However, the way the bill is written on what the definition of a complete street is and where it's applicable appears to make it seem that way that it is. The second issue we have does relate to cost and cost participation, because there is a cost for putting this infrastructure in. We agree that it is something that we need to do, that we need to provide sidewalks, walkability, things like that. But we also need to understand that there's cost participation policies and things like that that don't necessarily make it everyone's responsibility for complete streets. There are local responsibilities. For example, in St. Paul in particular, sidewalks, anything behind the curb in the city of St. Paul in Ramsey County is the responsibility of the city to install. So we talk about sidewalks, bikeways, lighting for pedestrian lighting, things like that. All is a local responsibility. Similarly, even though we can utilize our municipal state aid funding to do pathways, etc., along the arterial streets, the municipal state aid streets, it still comes out of our municipal state aid account, and it is our responsibility. Even on trunk highway roads, I believe the cost participation is it's our responsibility for local funding. So we appreciate the fact that some of these cost participation policies need to be looked at also, because it becomes a big burden on us as local government. And once it gets constructed the first time, the responsibility for maintenance is an issue. In St. Paul, I mentioned we have over 1,000 miles of sidewalk. Right now, we're funded to replace sidewalks about once every 110 years. So the available dollars to keep the system functioning is also an important factor that needs to be addressed in this regard. So if there's any questions, I'd be available for questions, but otherwise thank you for the opportunity to voice our concerns.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've been listening. It's my second year in the committee now, but kind of getting into the weeds and some of the things I haven't seen before. But as I've watched over the years and seen projects be evaluated and studied, whether it's four-lane highways or whether it's a city street with MnDOT's participation, I haven't seen anything here yet that I don't already see. They're talking about sidewalks, they talk about bike lanes, they talk about whether a bridge should be wide enough for a bicycle path or whatever, and it seems like they're doing those sorts of things. I guess my first question, maybe Mr. Moxco, if you would suggest to me or give me an eye thought, how would this change what you've been doing with MnDOT and what MnDOT's been doing with you as you evaluate when you're going to rebuild a road or put a road in or whatever? How would this change that process? Would there be something that's being done that would be done that's not currently being done in terms of looking at projects and what they would be doing?
Mr. Moxco, is that it? Moxco?
Correct. Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. In the city of St. Paul, I'm not sure that it would change the way we operate in St. Paul. However, I do know that there are concerns in areas other than an urban area like we are about how things get implemented and how they get worked on. For example, when the Lafayette Bridge was proposed to be reconstructed, the cost of the bike lane walkway on the Lafayette Bridge was started out as the responsibility of the city if we wanted it. Through negotiations and a lot of conversation, MnDOT did accept the responsibility for putting a walkway, bikeway along the bridge. So I think to some degree this type of legislation helps give guidance that is an important part of the infrastructure. So I don't want to say that it's not helpful in forging policy, because it is. But just how effective it is and changes, I think, varies by jurisdiction and by district.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this brings up another issue, and similar to what you're talking about. In my district on Orinoco, when they rebuilt part of 52, it was a second phase of Route 52, there was a new bridge put over, and there was a discussion about whether that bridge should be wide enough for a bike path. The discussion was there. It wasn't like it was something that nobody thought about. They definitely thought about it. It had more to do with who was going to pay and who was going to pay and how that's going to be divided up. So I guess my question maybe for Representative Obermiller, does this do something about who's going to pay? Does it say something about that? Are we putting something in place about who's going to be paying for that bike path? If it's not an issue of whether it gets talked about or not, but the issue is who's paying for it, does this change that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, I guess the answer to your direct question is this doesn't address the issue of who's going to pay. So it doesn't address that. But it does address a bigger issue on this policy thing. Certainly MnDOT is already putting in place context-sensitive solutions in various roads and so forth. What this does is it kind of sets out as the policy, this is how we're going to handle the evaluation of every road that we're going to construct or reconstruct. So thinking through on roads where you might just say, well, this is the way Highway 12 always looked, and we're just going to repave it, or we're going to reconstruct it, or we're going to make it look just like that, because that's how it always is different than saying, all right, let's think about how this, I'm using Highway 12 as an example, how Highway 12 is going to look in 5 years when the new school that goes in down at the end of the block is going to be there, and 7 houses are along the side. And so the goal is to basically say we're going to be thinking on it. Maybe we're doing this already in a lot of places. We're not doing it everywhere. And this puts at a policy level to say, Let's start thinking about these things up front, because I think that's important to making sure that we're saving the costs and building these roads the right the first time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's my last one.
No problem.
Having said that, then it seems to me we're doing these sorts of things now. I mean, engineers do that. It's like an architect; that's their job, is to look at, to step back and say, what do I need to have here? And I think when we build a new road, it'd be the same sort of thing. As we get prescriptive in terms of here is exactly what you will evaluate and get a little more detailed about that, are we open up the possibility for some litigation here, for someone to come in, maybe a interested party in one aspect of this, and say, here's the law, you were supposed to do this, you haven't done this? Are we open up the possibility maybe of actually stretching things out because of litigation, because somebody will say, well, you're supposed to evaluate walkways, we don't think it was done properly based on this new law that says you're supposed to evaluate walkways? Representative Oakmiller, do you see anything like that, that somebody would say, we're not doing the way the law is, if they've looked at it not according to somebody's idea of what it should be?
Representative.
Mr. Chair and Representative Demmer, I don't think that's a major concern here, probably not even a concern at all, because obviously I can't control anyone who might sue about any given topic, of course. What we're putting in place here now is an opportunity for the commissioner, or I should say a requirement for the commissioner, to reach out to the stakeholders that are involved, state and local governments, road authorities, to establish this policy. So the language of the bill itself isn't prescriptive as into what that actual policy will ultimately be, although I think it sets out some pretty good parameters for it. But the actual policy will be written by the commissioner and thought about by the commissioner and all the various stakeholders and their input. So I think you're going to see what we hope to be is a good buy-in from these various communities, many of which are already doing the complete streets on a local level. The buy-in that will be there will help avoid those types of issues.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, there's been a good discussion. I'm thankful for the questions here. I'm wondering, Mr. Chair, if Mr. Peterson from MnDOT might come forward and we might get some clarification.
I was going to call him ahead. We've got him in schedule here.
I have a couple questions for Mr. Peterson.
Were there questions further of Mr. Metzko first?
Oh, I apologize.
No, thank you, Mr. Metzko. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, if I might. Mr. Peterson, here's my first question for MnDOT. Does MnDOT support the concept of the complete streets bill?
Mr.
Chairman, Representative Morrow, yes, MnDOT does support the concept of the complete streets bill. The commissioner has directed the appropriate individuals in the agency to move forward with developing an implementation plan, and that work is actually underway right now.
Thank you. If I may continue, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. We're having some discussion about a preliminary fiscal note and a $2 million figure. If this bill weren't to become law, would MnDOT be spending any of that $2 million? Is any of this work that's reflected in that fiscal note being done anyway?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, yes, a considerable amount of the work that for which the cost is reflected in the fiscal note would occur anyway, is my understanding. As I mentioned, we're already pursuing the development and implementation of a complete streets policy. I don't know the extent to which this bill would add to that. The reporting clearly is an additional requirement. Other than that, I think probably most of the work left to our own devices, we would probably do that work and incur those costs anyway in absence of the legislation.
Thank you.
That was normal routine other than study, the study portion. That's what you're saying, Mr. Peterson. I mean, normally it's part of the contract and you're doing it. It's a cost to the project. The bicycle lanes now are included in the cost of the project where you're doing a complete streets job. But you aren't, the only additional cost you're saying would be the cost of the study and reporting. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, the costs I'm referring to are primarily those costs associated with like reviewing our standards and our project development manuals and identifying those places where we would want to modify the existing language in order to accommodate the complete streets principles and approach, so that the cost to an individual project is something different. And I'm not necessarily an expert on those costs. We have others who probably could give you a better insight into that. But my understanding is there are a lot of things that can happen as you go through the process in developing a project where cost increases for one type of addition to the project might be offset by other adjustments to the project.
But normally that's inherent to the project anyhow when you do your design. So, I mean, it's normally something you're doing, the point I'm making, except for the study and reporting. Because if you're designing a job, they're looking at that in the first place, I would assume, unless they aren't doing their job.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Right. Any further questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, Robert. Mr. Peterson, when might this committee expect an accurate fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, hopefully in the very near future. After the conversation we heard with the committee earlier, I talked to our fiscal note coordinator and talked about some of the things, and I think there are a few things that maybe there was some misunderstanding, and we'll try to get that cleared up quickly.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Peterson, would you expect that the amount would go down?
I would, based upon my conversation with our fiscal note coordinator, Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, yes, I would expect that it would go down.
That's good to hear.
Representative Holberg, it's the chair's opinion we're going to lay the bill over. I was going to recommend to Representative Obermuller we would, because that won't delay it next time. It delays it till we move it out here. But basically next time, all we should be doing is voting on the bill, unless we go back all through it. But we'd be basically moving the bill out, and I think we should temporarily hold it over until we get that fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I know that we have a number of advocates and people who are very interested in this bill, and I know that I just hope, could you clarify one more time what you believe will happen at the next
hearing on this bill, so folks know whether they need to travel in or not.
We have another testifier, too, yet. Representative Obermueller, you have Judy Sanders, I believe, too.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Sanders,
she's coming
on the
up,
list.
Right?
Okay. Yes, we did. Two chairs right here.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Sanders.
Thank you very much. My name is Judy Sanders. I am here with the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota, and we're going to come see all of you tomorrow. If you don't have your appointment, get in line, because we're coming. I want to begin by telling you a little bit who we are. Most of you know this because you've been around not as long as I have, but almost. And we are the statewide organization of blind people who come here every year to let you know of our concerns and to let you know when you're doing something right. We try and do that. And this year, one of our concerns is about transportation and about the complete streets. That's not so much a concern, because we support the concept of complete streets. We want to be able to go out and walk down sidewalks instead of the shoulder of the street. We want to be able to walk down the sidewalk to a bus stop and know that a bus is going to come. We also want to be able to be on the back of tandem bicycles on the bike paths. Those are the kinds of things that we support. We are concerned about one part, and we're not exactly sure about whether this concern will be impacted by the complete streets legislation, but we think it could be, and we also think it's something you should know about. There is a thing that you sometimes see at intersections now called an accessible pedestrian signal. It makes a noise, usually, letting you know that it's there. So that's happening all the time. It's like a tick. You worry that, you hope that that's just a signal and not something else. And when you find this signal, then you press a button. And there are different styles of these, but the purpose of it is to tell you when the light is in your direction so that you know you can cross, or you think you can cross the street. The theory is that you can. What you don't know is if a car is running the light or somebody's turning right or something like that. Our concern is that these are going to be put in wholesale, that there will be a universal design which will require these at all intersections. And so we want to remind you that blind people have been traveling safely when we get the opportunity and the training to learn how to do it for many years. That means crossing streets. We've been doing it, and so we aren't sure why all of a sudden these signals are needed wholesale in a lot of intersections. Our fear is that it is our understanding that MnDOT is instructing cities to, whenever they do new construction, to put one of these in. And we understand that's what MnDOT is doing in the intersections under its responsibility. We understand also that these signals cost around $10,000. Can you imagine spending that at every intersection? Rochester thinks that it has to put these in, and they are getting complaints from citizens who don't like that tone that helps you locate the signal. They don't like it at night when they're trying to go to sleep. And of course, they are blaming us because they think we in the National Federation of the Blind requested these. We want people to know we didn't. We also want you to know that there may be the occasional intersection where these would be helpful. and that what we really need is criteria that would help us figure out if an intersection would be safer with these. And I think that would be fiscally responsible and also would safeguard us. That's about all I have to say about those, but we are looking forward to those sidewalks. And
thank you. Representative Obermuller, I presume, in the as they put this together, those would be some considerations that they'd look at.
Right, Mr. Chair, exactly right. And when Ms. Sanders brought this issue to my attention, I was so sure she was going to be on the other side, that she was going to be asking me to mandate these at every corner, and our bill didn't do that either. So the bill essentially says, let's put this, if this is the right piece of equipment in the right intersection, we should do it, and we should be thinking about it, but we wouldn't require that.
Berkman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very briefly, Ms. Sanders, I'm not sure if there is another organization representing blind individuals in the state of Minnesota that has a different position on this issue or not, and I'm wondering if you're aware of.
Oh, there always is.
Okay. Okay. I just checking things.
Thank you, Representative Horkman. I understand they don't get along too well, too. Once.
Well, let me answer that a little bit more forthrightly.
Not too long, though, Ms.
No,
Sanders.
I won't. And we get along about as well as you do with the other side of the aisle.
That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad.
And I would also say what that means is the responsibility is you to decide which side makes sense. We each have a right to our views, and I respect their right to advocate for what they believe.
Yeah. We have another question.
No, this is just a comment. Ms. Sanders is one of my constituents. That's why
I am.
Oh, okay.
I'm proud to be her representative.
Thank you.
She heard
I'm
you.
Proud to have you as my representative.
If there are no further testimony, we're kind of getting, we have one more bill, unless there are questions from Ms. Sanders. No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think we don't have any other, someone from the audience need to testify or want to testify for or against? If not, Representative Obermuller, I think we'll just temporarily, or not temporarily, we'll lay the bill over till we get that fiscal note. And we probably do not need additional testimony. That would be our intent.
All right.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee.
So the bill will be laid over. Thank you. Next bill is Representative Hornstein.
Missed the whole thing. I'm always relieved. Was it good or not?
Yeah. It's so nice. He's got a broad range.
Representative Hornstein, House File 2807. You move in House File 2807.
Yes, is this working okay, Mr. Chair?
Could we have it quiet in the whatever you call it, in the gallery, right?
I'll wait for the crowd to thin out a little.
Representative Hornstein, you
may
speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I would like to move House File 2807. I'd like it recommended for passage and sent to the Finance Committee.
To the Finance Committee? Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is House File 2807 is the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill from last year, from 2009. So this committee has heard it. I just wanted to happen to this bill at the end of the session last year. We passed it. There was a conference committee. We passed the conference committee report, and there was a veto of this bill. And so I have a May 22nd letter from the governor in which he identified several items that drew the veto. And so I'll let you know what those are and explain how we've handled it. The first one was a provision from the Senate related to passenger rail. Senator Sieben had legislation that was included in the conference committee report that basically said that MnDOT should discuss the route of the high-speed rail line so that it goes through La Crosse, Wisconsin, that when we deal with the state of Wisconsin, that at least go through La Crosse. But the governor has been consistent and said that he doesn't want to set any specific route stops or endpoints, so that was one of his concerns. That is now deleted from this bill. The second one had to do with railroad employees. The governor was concerned that we didn't vet that provision, but in fact we did. We had a hearing in this committee. I remember Representative Beard, Representative Severson were very active in that discussion, and we did pass that provision on a divided show of hands vote. So I would disagree with the governor that it wasn't vetted, but nonetheless, he disagrees with that policy, and we've deleted it from the bill to meet his concerns. That had to do with future passenger rail projects following federal railroad labor laws. So that is no longer in the bill to meet the governor's concerns. There was a third and final concern that he had related to the Council on Transportation Access. Again, this was a Senate provision, I have had some conversations with the Senate author about this provision, and as well as the governor's office, and we've come up with some compromise language, which I'm going to move. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll go over the provisions of the bill. I'll have a couple of author's amendments. But the bottom line here is that we have met each and every one of the governor's concerns. Now, I did find out about 15 minutes prior to our hearing today that there is now a new concern that has been raised. And what I've requested is that it's very difficult to kind of address that without some very specific issues in writing. I have requested from the governor's office that they put any additional concerns in writing to us so we can respond. And quite frankly, that was one of the problems we had at the end of session last year. And I know there was a lot going on, as you know, at the end of session last year. A lot of people had a lot of balls in the air, and the communication wasn't clear about this bill and the governor's concerns. And so really moving forward, I want to make sure that we have those concerns in advance, in writing, and that's my request. So as of now, this bill addresses all of the concerns that the governor raised in his May 22nd veto letter. I'll also...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Representative Holbert.
If I might, just for clarification purposes, and we've had a number of discussions on this bill, and I assumed that the bill that you put in addressed all of the governor's concerns, but I just want to clarify that the bill that you put in, you addressed the concerns in the letter?
Yes, and a couple of additional ones, Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, which I can let you know about.
Okay, so you had discussions with the governor's office prior to putting together your file?
Yes.
And then added additional things beyond the letter?
Yes.
And then now there's new things? Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, I'm glad you brought that up. I met a couple of times with the governor's representative during the interim, and I met a couple of times with MnDOT representatives. And so there were some concerns MnDOT had that are not in the letter that I've also addressed and taken out at their request. And that had to do with the Dojinki days. apparently there has been some progress made on that issue with MnDOT and Representative Broad, and so Representative Broad was certainly fine with deleting that, and MnDOT was more comfortable with that being deleted. And then the other one had to do with Highway 14, an environmental study. This was Representative Morrow's bill, and I understand also there's been progress on that issue. So I've had discussions with Representative Morrow, and he was fine with taking that out. So with the deletion of the Dojinki days and the deletion of the EIS issue with Highway 14, you know, this bill, as of 4:15 p.m. today, my understanding was, met all of the concerns that the governor's office and MnDOT had. So with that, there are two very minor amendments that I would like to, I'd like to add one author's amendment to get at the governor's concern, Mr. Chair, and then I believe Representative Demmer and Representative Portman have some small amendments to their own provisions that that they would like to move as well. And then we could get the bill in the shape that we can...
We only have one written amendment that I'm aware of.
Okay.
And that's a...
There's an oral amendment, I believe, that might be Representative Demmer's. Demmer's, I'm sorry. And if you want to move that, that's fine.
Representative Demmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to move the A2807A1 amendment.
Okay, Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this deals with is I had a provision that basically deals with the expiration of corporate deputy registrars. Right now in law, it says that any corporate deputy registrar will, their commission will expire as of January 1st of 2012. The bill that I had does away with that and allows them to continue on. What this amendment does was brought to my attention by Representative Solberg, actually. We deal with corporate deputy registrars, but this also would add to that any deputy registrars that are nonprofit corporations. And so that's the change, to just allow those. Apparently he has one in his district that's a nonprofit corporation that contracts for that. So this would also allow them to go on and not have their commission expire.
That basically was a number change, or not a number, identify. Yeah. Any questions of Representative Dimmer? If not, all in favor of the amendment A1, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary. The amendment is adopted.
So, Mr. Chairman, there's another friendly amendment that I believe Representative Hortman has.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My amendment's being passed out. Excuse me. And it's on page 22. My language in the bill is section 28, and it's about right-of-way acquisition and doing it ahead of time when it might be more cost-effective. And a concern was brought to me by the manufactured home lobbyist that the language we had regarding homestead property did not include manufactured homes. And so the change that Mr. Burris has suggested is that we add a clause to the definition of homestead property to make clear that it includes manufactured homes as they are currently defined elsewhere in statute at 327B01, subdivision 13.
Any questions of Representative Hortman? If not, all in favor of the amendment MB1, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary? MB1 amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Hortman. And I have one, and you know, Representative Pulaski would kill me because I know he doesn't like oral amendments. But this is one that, again, just was kind of finalized with the Senate author just several minutes before the hearing. And I want to do this amendment, Mr. Chair and members, because this would, I believe, reflect the language that the governor's office would be comfortable with to address the third concern they had in the veto letter. So this is an oral amendment on page 17, line 20. And it deals with subdivision 5. This is compensation for a interagency committee on transit coordination, and I understand that's known as Icky Ticky. I know people were talking about Icky Ticky. I had no idea what they were talking about, but that's what it is. And my understanding is that the governor's office would just like to have the words compensation and deleted in line 20, page 17, line 20. I would move delete compensation and.
Does everyone have that?
Mm-hmm.
Page 17, line 20. Delete on the end of the sentence, the first sentence. Compensation, yeah. Compensation to end.
Right.
Mm. Any discussion or questions? Representative Beard?
Mr. Chair, yeah. I could, and thank you, Representative Hornstein, for being accommodating. Compensation was the operative word there that was giving them some heartburn, because it was they were quite willing to compensate people or reimburse them for expenses for getting to the meetings and incurred at the meetings. Compensation, I don't think they're to be gathering per diem, and I think that might have been the intimation. So I wanted to be sure the word compensation come out. My question, Representative Hornstein, is the first bolded word, compensation, would that word be better if it was reimbursement, or is it okay to leave that one as compensation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, I think you raise a good point, because since we're deleting compensation, I would say we should also add, I would also like to move an oral amendment for consistency to have the bolded subdivision 5 read reimbursement.
Yeah. Do you want to withdraw and restate? Rather
okay,
than
so let's let's have one motion here for this. Mm-hmm. Members, I would like to move an oral amendment on page 17, line 20. Strike the word compensation in bold and insert reimbursement. and then also delete the word compensation later in line 20, as well as the word and. Mm-hmm. So the subdivision would read, reimbursement, members of the council shall receive reimbursement of expenses as provided in the cited section of law.
Representative Hornstein moves the oral amendment. Any discussion or questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 Contrary? The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to very briefly, just to refresh everyone's memory, let you know what's in the bill. We have two provisions from Representative Champion on construction impacts mitigation, rest stop prohibitions. Representative Saylor's Veterans Memorial Highway. Representative Eakin has a highway, Veterans Memorial, as well as a Becker County one. There's a Granite City Crossing, which is a Senate provision. We have a ped bike bridge improvement program, which is very much related to what we did prior. We have Representative Demmer's provision, towed vehicle contents removal. We addressed a lot of Representative Severson's concerns in that, and so that's in the bill, as well as towing. Gridlock regulation, DAVNI. Representative Detmer's scoring big on this bill. We have his shoulder use by transit buses, a couple more Senate provisions on driver feedback equipment on windshields, overweight vehicle permit, technical cleanup, cargo tank vehicle weight restrictions. That's Representative Eakin. I just want to say, members, on that one, this is not an indication now that we're opening the barn door for all kinds of debate and discussion about truck weights. This was a very narrow piece related to propane, and it's my understanding from discussions with the Trucking Association that they're not interested in having that debate as well. Representative Holberg knows well, when she was the finance chair, that can really soak up a lot of time and energy in the committee. So I just want to reassure members that this is not in any way meant to be indicative of a change of heart.
Representative Hornstein, Representative Reinert has a question.
Yes, Representative, yes.
Reinert?
It's not for you, Representative Hornstein, so Mr. Chair, I can wait until the representatives.
Do you want to complete your...
Yeah, just very quickly then, we have sections 18 and 20, that's Representative Hausman's MnDOT goals and greenhouse gas emissions, and I believe that's the area of concern that the governor has, which we'll look forward to his written comments on that. We have the Council on Transportation Access. We have amended that. That's the Senator Dibble provision. We have commuter rail committee membership, rail track technology grants, railroad employee carrier regulations, airport authority zoning, RALF loan flexibility. That's what we amended with Representative Hortman. Two more Senate provisions on parkway for regular route transit and towing. Town road expedited extinguishment. I hope, Representative Holberg, this is the year that we get that done. We've had that for a few years. Representative Garofalo scored big with the Farmington deputy registrar, and that remains in. And then Representative Leader's hazardous waste transportation permits repeal. One final note I would say is there is fiscal impact to this bill. It's minimal. I have received a temporary fiscal note from Ms. Zewers, and apparently there's some ways we can make it even smaller related to the hazardous waste transport permits repeal provision. But my understanding is that we have about something like $5,000 encumbered in this bill, Ms. Zewers. Is that correct? If we were to remove the finance piece on that hazardous waste repeal?
Mr. Chair and members, if the cost from the hazardous materials repealer is dealt with, there's a $5,000 cost to the general fund still remaining, and that's related to the rail safety technology grant program that MnDOT would need to set up. So, and then the only other cost in the bill is related to the bike and pedestrian accommodations on the bridges, and that is a cost from the Trunk Highway Bond Proceeds Fund, and that would be about $1.5 million per year starting in fiscal year 2012.
So just, I know we've had lots of conversation about fiscal notes today. I wanted to be upfront with the committee, Mr. Chair, about what we're looking at in terms of a temporary fiscal note.
Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, and it's a rookie question, when we do things like name trunk highways, Veteran Memorial Highway, who's responsible to pay for that change in signage?
Representative Reinert, whoever requests it pays for the signs and maintenance.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? No. Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, I got a couple comments and a question. First of all, Representative Hornstein, thank you for the accommodation and for there are things in here that need to pass, and I'm looking forward to being able to encourage all my colleagues in both the corner offices and here to give this a thumbs up. The couple little railroad pieces in here about the signaling switches in dark territory, I think is a good one. I'm sure that MnDOT can find a way to let the railroad department work those several letters and encouragement through for less than $5,000. The complete bridges program that you have with bike trails and so on, that might be another discussion, but just know that some of us are paying attention to how much that's going to cost. I do have a question on Section 13 on page 10, impeding traffic, intersection gridlock, and it gets at some of the concerns I expressed earlier about the complete streets. By the way, whoever named that did a masterful job, so it puts anybody who says, wait just a minute, in the awkward position of being for incomplete streets, one would think. But I know how those things work, and I just have to tip my hat to whoever picked that. So, speaking of intersection gridlock, we've got some issues with bicycles blowing red lights and tying up, using their newfound legal status on the roads to tie up intersections and so on. I remember a really icky scene here in Minneapolis a couple of Septembers ago. And I want to know, does this apply only to automobiles, or is there statutes that apply to bicycles that end up blocking streets, blocking lanes, and tying up intersections as well?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Beard. And I'll take a crack at that, even though this is Representative Dabney's bill. But I do not recall, quite honestly, a discussion about bikes. Okay. I there was a very extensive conversation with Representative Holberg on this. I think we even had to draw some pictures so that people could understand. And it's really my understanding that this was not a part of it.
Okay. Well, discussion noted. It's probably good law, but at some point we're going to have the discussion about what bicycles can do in intersections as well, especially when they seem to be designed to impede automobile traffic. The other one is the piece on page 14, and this may be directed to Representative Hausman, but I've got to tell you, I've got some grave concerns about the expansion of MnDOT's mission now to include saving the planet, particularly on line 14.31, and particularly in light of the meltdown that's happening in the whole global warming thing, pun intended, that somehow striking putting MnDOT in charge of, among other things, watching out for the climate and the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions as part of their standard of operation, strikes me as something that's completely unnecessary and flies in the face of science that's finally evolving or being allowed to be presented to the public in such a way that we realize that perhaps the whole thing was overblown considerably and is something that we shouldn't be spending time, money, or energy worrying about. I would speak strongly in favor of striking at least those portions of line 1431 and 1432, although I've got some other concerns about now making MnDOT in charge of our waistline, encourage us to walk, and so on and so forth. I think we can probably handle that ourselves, but I won't ask you to strike the walking part.
Are you moving that, Representative Beard?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would be prepared to offer an oral amendment either here or depending on where the bill's going. But let's just, for the fun of it, start right here. Line 1431, unstrike the word and then strike the words that are underlined, and the climate, comma, including reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, semicolon.
It's a total, all the underlined portion.
Correct.
Everyone see that?
Correct.
Matt, or Mr. Burris, you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, the changes you suggest actually would eliminate all changes to that section, so I might recommend that that the amendment be simply to page 14, delete section 20.
Well, there you go. That would be efficient.
You want to withdraw that amendment? And
Mr. Chairman, I'll withdraw, and I'll just make the motion to delete Section 20, which would eliminate the changes, I believe, speaking to the amendment, and just leave it in law as it exists at the moment.
Section 20 also goes to top of page 15.
And there's no changes recommended
right.
there.
There's no change that's existing. Well, yeah, that's right. That's only the new language. Yes. Does everyone see that? Delete all the new language in Section 20? Any questions? Oh, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would speak against that amendment. I don't want to repeat the arguments made on the floor last night by Representatives Kalin and Knuth. As a state, we've sort of moved beyond this, and really all we're saying here is that as MnDOT looks at all the modes of transportation that they plan for, we're not making them responsible for, I don't know what the suggestions were, waistlines and so other things, but it just simply acknowledges what we begin to understand about various modes of transportation and the impacts they have. I suspect MnDOT has these as part of their discussions on the macro level at least once a year, so I don't think it broadens their mission. We've moved beyond that as a state legislature. I think we've moved beyond that as a country. So I think deleting this and going backwards is not the appropriate thing to do today.
Any further discussion? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going backwards is not exactly the way I would phrase this. I think we've been led down a path, and I'd like to get us off that trail and get us back on the main line. That's where I'm trying to go with this, and I think we should probably head in that direction. Greenhouse gas emissions, again, for Sarah, the last several years, we've been chasing a chimera, I think, that's built completely on either misrepresented at best or fraudulent science at worst. And I think that finally, real scientists are catching up with the idea, the whole concept that they have been snookered, squelched, blacklisted and things like that, and are finding the courage to stand up and say, enough's enough. Enough's enough. So do we want to actually put this in statute? You're right, we've got a lot of this stuff. We've got a lot of this stuff in statute that we're going to have to be extracting here over the next few years as we come back to our senses and start dealing in reality.
Any further discussion or questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And as the author of the bill, I would also agree with Representative Hausman. I would strongly oppose this. I believe that, you know, this is really a debate about whether, mm-hmm. you know, there is climate change and mm-hmm. the science around it and you know, whether we have greenhouse gas emissions, global warming. And I agree with Representative Hausman. This is still mainstream scientific thought. But I think the issue that Representative Beard raised that I wanted to respond to in terms of why is this in a MnDOT bill. And we do have 25% of the greenhouse gas emissions total are from the transportation sector. So this debate, this discussion has been a lot around greenhouse gas emissions from power plants. There's an important role that transportation plays, and I think that's why it's in the bill. So again, Mr. Chair, I would just strongly recommend that we reject the Beard Amendment, but it sounds like we're going to have a lively debate this entire session about this issue. So let the debate begin.
Discussion?
One last comment.
Representative Beard.
Representative Hornstein, climate change is not what this is about. The climate changes, that's a given. We're all agreeing. This is about global warming, and I'd like you to stick to that whenever we talk about this. I will be when we visit it again on the floor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Beard moved deleting Section 20 on page 14. Any further discussion or question? If not, is the yes vote deletes this section and a no vote doesn't delete it. So just you have it correct. All in favor of deleting Section 20 or not, Representative Beard's motion, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary?
No.
No.
the motion is defeated. Any further questions? If not, Representative Hornstein, you move to this bill goes back to finance.
Yes, correct, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hornstein renews his motion that House File 2807 be as amended, be passed and sent back to finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary?
No.
The House File 2807 is passed. And before the members leave, we don't have a meeting Thursday because of all
the
bills
you,
that we
Chairman
have
and
we've
members,
gone.
Thank you.
Any, we had a bunch of bills. Everybody withdrew them. They just got concerned that they couldn't pass them, I guess.
I've got one.
No further comment. The meeting's adjourned.